Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Close Up Talk Radio, the unique internet broadcast series that brings you together with some of the most amazing, important, and interesting individuals from the worlds of business, industry, travel, art, and entertainment. From company owners, CEOs, and presidents, to the technical wizards behind the scenes who create the magic that make their company's products and services so special. Here is your opportunity to hear firsthand the fascinating stories of how it all happened from those who actually made it possible. This is Close Up Talk Radio. And a good evening to you, everybody. I'm Doug Llewellyn, your host. Welcome back to Close Up Talk Radio. Tonight, something very special indeed. We're going to be talking with a very unique individual who is a specialist in several areas, but, you know, let me just preface it this way. On the surface, it might appear that dentistry and psychotherapy have very little in common, but, you know, quite frankly, in both cases, it normally is the case where the patient doesn't want to be dealing with either one of those professions. Both types of patients typically are going to resist addressing their problems until they just can't resist any longer. Thankfully, once they do take that step, they can finally receive the kind of help they definitely need. Our guest tonight, Dr. Jay Goldman, is both a dentist and a licensed clinical social worker. Now, before he transitioned into his new career as a psychotherapist, Dr. Goldman served as a clinical director of Orofacial and TMG Pain Clinic at NYU's College of Dentistry, and as a dentist, he specialized in chronic pain management. Today, the doctor treats patients for the emotional component of their chronic pain, as well as issues related to their quality of life. As he has said many times, sometimes we can significantly reduce or eliminate their pain, but in most cases, he works on improving their quality of life and improving their family's quality of life. And when you put it together, it really does make a really, really big impact. In any event, Dr. Goldman is with us. His headquarters is in Palm Beach Garden, Florida, and it's a real treat to have Dr. Jay Goldman with us. Dr. Goldman, good evening. How are you tonight?
I'm doing fine, Doug. Thanks for having me on.
Listen, it's such a pleasure to have you with us. I'd like to focus, you know, as we get underway, a little bit of aspect and focus on your really two careers here. As a psychotherapist, talk to me a little bit about that area of your background and your expertise there, and then we'll get into the dental aspect as well in pain management, which is really a huge area, I know. But talk a little bit about that for me. How did you get involved in both areas of this medical profession?
Well, as a dentist, actually starting in dental school, I had some elective time, and somebody was lecturing on treating headaches and how you need to treat the jaw and the jaw muscles, and you can get rid of headaches. I took an elective program for a couple of weeks. It was very interesting. I actually started treating patients, eliminating their headaches, and most of it coming from clenching, and the jaw muscles of the face and jaws were tightened up and caused these tension headaches, sometimes mimicking migraines. And I started off real early, over 40 years ago, doing that. And when I got out of school, of course, I enjoyed that aspect of dentistry and gravitated to it, eventually just specialized in that type of treatment. During my, I'd say around the early 80s, I brought a psychologist on. He actually approached me as a friend of mine and said he can treat the emotional component of pain, which I knew nothing about, and he actually introduced me to that aspect. And I said, okay, if you think you can help these folks, you know, go for it. And I really didn't know what he was going to do, but it brought my success level of treating these patients from about 70%, which is pretty good for a chronic pain practice, but it brought it up to about 80, 85%. So,
no
of
kidding.
Course, I was a believer. I was a believer, and, of course, I owe it to him. He's my mentor. And some years later, 25 or 6 years later, when I retired from dentistry, I said, I want to do what he did. And so I went back to school, became a clinical social worker, wanting to treat, of course, the emotional component of pain with behavioral and psychotherapies, and here I am.
Now, the pain management you're talking about really does not focus primarily or specifically just on dental pain. You're talking about whole body pain, wherever, right?
Oh, absolutely. Certainly in the early days, you know, as a dentist, I just treated pain from the neck up and, a variety of ailments. But as a clinical social worker, it can be pain in your feet from a peripheral neuropathy or back pain.
Sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, what aspect do you focus primarily on now in your practice? I mean, do you still do both, or are you primarily focusing on the pain management?
Well, I only do pain management as a clinical social worker, but of course I have the background from the both medical and dental aspects, because I've taught in dental and medical schools, and having that background certainly helps understand the patient's conditions. But just doing the clinical aspects of clinical social work, addressing the psychological, emotional pain that they have, which can, in some cases, cause the pain, certainly perpetuate the pain. And it's really a matter of how the patient copes. So that's primarily what we do. And we probably have about 15 or 16 different ways of either eliminating the pain or helping them with their quality of life. It's an extraordinary field and very gratifying.
Well, you know, it's really interesting. I must say, the doctor has a really interesting, unique, and different kind of website, which, by the way, is www.jgoldman.com. Just spell it just the way it sounds. But, you know, you describe yourself as not just a dentist or a doctor, as a technologist, a designer, a speaker, author, and a generally swell guy, which I think is absolutely terrific. What do all of those different aspects of your background and your career, where do they come in? When you talk about being a technologist, what are you referring to there?
Well, actually, I'm not sure what you mean when you say technologist. I don't recall using that phraseology as a technologist. As an author, I wrote a few chapters in a textbook regarding orofacial pain and TMJ disorders. Excuse me. And, go ahead.
Well, you know, it's possible I'm looking at a wrong website here.
yeah.
No, it really is possible.
Yeah.
You know, maybe I must be on the wrong website. I don't think this has ever happened before, but I'm looking at jgoldman.com, and
it should be J.R. Goldman. Yeah. I'll tell you, that's why I use my initial. It's funny that
you know, now that makes a huge difference, Doc.
Right?
This is really funny.
Since college, I've always used my middle initial because I was always confused with another J. Goldman my whole life. So I'm used to this.
Well, now it makes a whole lot of difference. Now I see your picture, and good enough. That is a first for me. Very good. Okay. It just proves that when you're reading something, you got to look very carefully, especially on websites, because if you leave out one letter, that R makes all the difference. In the world. Yep. Indeed. Mm-hmm. Very interesting. All right. Let us then focus a little bit on your career now, and what you're focusing on as a pain doctor. And I also know that sleep apnea is another area that you focus on. Yeah, and that's something I hear a lot of people have a real, real problem with. You started making anti-snoring appliances as a dentist, right, many years ago.
In the late 80s, probably 1988, 89, I met a pulmonary specialist who was discussing sleep apnea with me. I never even heard of sleep apnea in 1988. Not too long after meeting this man and then taking some workshops and seminars and studying it a bit, today it's much more common. Dentists now have a whole organization. But in those years, there was no organization concerning sleep apnea or obstructive sleep apnea. And it's generally treated. First of all, it's very serious. People die in their sleep. They stroke. They stroke out. They get heart attacks. This is not something to be taking lightly. Snoring is not the issue. It may be part of it, and you can snore and have a very healthy life. But if you stop breathing and gasp for air, and of course you need a witness to notice that, someone has to say, my God, you stop breathing, then you really need to have a sleep study. People wear a CPAP machine. It's forced air. Nobody likes to wear it. 50-60% of the folks don't wear it, although they should. But a dental appliance, which can be used to advance the jaw forward, it opens up the airway, and it treats sleep apnea. Also a very gratifying part of what I do.
And, I understand you had sleep apnea yourself. Did you realize that you had?
No, I didn't know. I thought my life was pretty normal, and I actually fell asleep driving. How do you like that? And thank heavens nobody was hurt, but I had a little mishap about 20-some-odd years ago, and my doctor questioned me, and he said, you might have sleep apnea. I went for a test, and I had very severe sleep apnea, which I guess would explain why I would fall asleep in movies or TV shows, fall asleep reading. And so I was treated with the CPAP. My apnea actually was too severe to have a dental appliance, something like that. So I have to sleep with this machine with a nose piece. It looks like I'm breathing in sweet air, you know, with a little mask over your nose. There's different designs, and fortunately today they made them much more comfortable than 20 years ago. But you've got to be compliant, and you've got to wear it. And I do.
You know what amazes me? In all seriousness, if I had this problem, it would not have occurred to me that a dentist would be the one to go see to help get help on that.
That's right.
I just never made that comparison before.
Yeah, and if you look at some of the x-rays that we take, a cephalometric x-ray, which is a shot at the head and the neck, and you x-ray that, you can actually see the airway. And then if you were to move your jaw forward and move your jaw back or press on the jaw and move it back, you can actually see the airway closing up. It's the jaw and all the anatomy connected to the jaw and the neck, which is responsible or partly responsible. There's different types of sleep apnea, but basically you wear an appliance, which is actually like an upper biplate and a lower biplate together, attached by a little apparatus, so you call it a hinge, and it's adjustable, and it brings the jaw forward to a point that opens up the airway. Years ago, when I first made them, we didn't have those fancy gadgets where we can titrate or adjust it forward. Years ago, you just connected an upper and lower biplate with acrylic. It was kind of archaic if you think about it, but now it still worked. But today they're excellent appliances.
Give me a lot of people listening may not really know what you mean when you say apnea, the word apnea. Give me a definition of sleep apnea. How would you describe it?
Very simply, you stop breathing. Just imagine that. You just stop breathing. Now, you stop breathing. Hang on a second.
Sorry.
I was playing a chess game.
Oh, and it's your move.
Telling me before you.
Yeah, right. Your move.
Isn't that funny? I thought that was your program telling me.
No.
I'm sorry about that.
That's okay.
So anyway, you stop breathing. Now, the average apnea, or the average period of time that one stops breathing, is about 10 to 12 seconds. A severe apnea, you can stop breathing 50, 60, 70 seconds. Now, when that happens, you build up tremendous blood pressure. Vessels can burst. The heart is underneath tremendous pressure, and you know it could be fatal.
I was just going to say, can it kill you?
Yeah, of course, it can.
Okay,
and
sure.
So apnea basically means you stop breathing. Yeah.
So obviously, people. It's interesting. You said you didn't. You weren't aware you had it. Obviously, you weren't stopping sleeping that long. I mean, you would sleep through it, right?
Yes, you know what
I mean. If you're stopping breathing, you would stop breathing maybe for 10 or 12 seconds. Yeah, you're not aware of it.
I'm not aware of it. I had no idea I did that. No idea. I'm fast asleep. I'm thinking, you know, I always said, God, I don't have a sleep problem. I fall asleep before my head hits the pillow. And people always say that. That's their expression, right? I fall asleep before my head hits the pillow. But the reason you're doing that is because you're very sleep-deprived. You don't get restorative sleep. You don't fall into those deeper levels of sleep. When you have sleep apnea, you're only way up in the upper stages of sleep, and the brain is affected, all your organs are affected. It's just terrible. Easy to diagnose, by the way. Very easy to diagnose.
This, by the way, has nothing to do with these commercials you see on television of where people put a strip across their nose to hold the nostrils open. There's no connection between that and sleep apnea then, right?
Excuse me. Well, basically, there's no connection. That's correct.
Right.
However, some people have said that that helped them. I've heard them say that, and so I question if they really had apnea. No, that just opens up the nasal passages. And that's not quite enough to treat sleep apnea. That's right.
Okay. And I understand that you work now with, you have a network of dentists from down in the Caribbean all the way, you know, south of Miami that work with you on this kind of a problem, that you refer their patients to physicians to help in this specific area of sleep apnea? Is that right?
This is how it works. I have formed a network of dentists from Port St. Lucie down to South Miami. So we have a half a dozen or so dentists. The purpose of that is to get the physician to refer the patient to the dentist so they can get this appliance, which is covered by most insurances, by the way. But the physician is who has to get on board. That's challenging. It's tough to get the physician to make these referrals. I'm not sure why, but that's what I do. I don't actually perform the dentistry down here in Florida. I have this network, and I go out and I meet the physicians, and I lecture to them, and I make presentations. I even show them a CAT scan I have that shows somebody sleeping with the airway closing up almost completely. And then they wear an appliance. They go back to sleep, resume the CAT scan study, and the airway stays open. So it's very compelling, and it really shows that the appliance works. As I said, the challenging part is to just meet the physicians and get them to refer. The other thing I do, when you have sleep apnea, and this is where I come into this work as a therapist, when you have sleep apnea, anxiety is peaking. You stop sleeping, your heart's pounding, you wake up with anxiety, you have increased levels of depression, you even have cognitive impairment. Now, they've done a number of studies with the CPAP, and it showed that the CPAP, which is the positive, continuous positive pressure of air, will improve the anxiety, improve the depression, improve the cognitive impairment. But nobody's done the studies with the dental appliance. So that's what I'm attempting to do. We're doing a pilot study right now, measuring the patient's anxiety, depression, and any cognitive impairment that they might have, and do a before and after study and see after they're using the dental appliance, are these things improving? Of course, the hypothesis is it will improve, but we need to do the studies so that we can make that statement with empirical research, you know, backing us up.
And do you do that as a sleep study? Is that a sleep study where you're watching the patients as they sleep?
The sleep study in the lab, and there are some home sleep tests as well. That has to be done before, and that's how the physician makes the diagnosis. They then refer the patient to us. We then assess through an interview and different assessments. We then assess their level of anxiety and depression, and they then get the dental appliance, and then down the road we assess their anxiety and depression again.
Okay.
Yeah, but that's long after the sleep study. Yeah.
That's a really big issue, sleep apnea is. And, you know, it's funny, you mentioned you having fallen asleep driving. You know, I'll bet you if most people, if they were really honest, would admit to at some point or other having fallen asleep, even if it was only for, you know, 3 or 4 seconds behind the wheel while they're driving.
I bet you on this. Yeah, I think so, too. I think it's very common. Yep.
Let me talk to you a little bit about the pain management aspect of your practice.
Oh, yeah.
How do you treat patients when they come into you and they start and are there specific areas of pain that are more you deal with more than others? I mean, back pain, leg pain, neck pain.
That's a pretty good question. That's a good question, because there are certain target areas that emotional pain or stress targets, you know, the back, the neck, the TM joints, the jaw joint. Typically those three areas, neck, back, and jaw, are the target areas, headaches and so forth. People usually don't complain of, you know, elbow pain or knee pain from the stresses of life. However, it's very interesting that many patients who have joint pain all over the body, or something called fibromyalgia, which is widespread pain, mostly in the soft tissues, it could be in the legs, have an emotional component in their life that has to be addressed. They might have had trauma in their life, physical trauma, sexual trauma, verbal abuse, neglect, teasing in high school. And believe it or not, that stuff doesn't go away unless it's resolved early. It stays. It stays in the brain. It actually is stored in there. And very often, that's actually what we have to help the patients through. And their migraines or their back pain actually gets relief.
You know, you probably just touched on it a bit, but I was going to ask you to describe the difference between emotional pain and, you know, back pain or neck pain. How does it show up or appear in the body? Is emotional pain, is that a headache? Or no, that's not emotional pain. Emotional pain is being, you know, bothered by certain things you started mentioning, being bullying or whatever, way back in high school, and you still feel that?
That's you know, pretty amazing. It's a tremendous field of psychology. And basically, when we assess a patient, we want to know what kind of internalized messages did they get, either from parents, from siblings, from bullying in high school, from teachers. Could be from baseball coaches. In other words, I'm not good, and I'm not good enough. I'm not lovable. I'm guilty. I'm shameful. These various what we call negative cognitions or negative self-referencing beliefs, what the patient feels about themselves, when they come up and they say, yes, I have those negative core beliefs, and that's the key there, the core belief, those things have to be studied, assessed first, and then we can remove them. We can remove them with a number of therapies, one called EMDR, those initials, EMDR, which is actually one of the gold standards for treating post-traumatic stress disorders, which is today much more popular now because of all the soldiers coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan and so forth. But with this procedure of EMDR actually treats post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD. And we utilize that same EMDR treatment in helping them with those negative core beliefs they have about themselves. You know, and so when they feel they...
Go ahead. I was going to ask you, how do you go about assessing a patient and their pain problem, where the what's really causing the pain? What happens when they come into your office initially and you know, you meet with them? Then obviously you really have to get involved with them and learn. How do you do it?
Well, it's certainly not done in one visit. And, you know, the assessment process actually it takes place over the entire course of treatment. So you're always learning about patients. The most important part of therapy, of course, is the trust that develops between the patient and me. And I would probably say that's my strong point. It was my strong point as a dentist. It's my strong point now as a therapist. And I don't know how it happens. I really don't. It just does. Maybe I'm lucky, but I developed that with the patient early on. And they open up. Most of them open up. They tell me about their life. And then we do an assessment trying to figure out basically how they feel about themselves. People who feel really good about themselves, have good ego strength, we call it, and then no problems with self-esteem, that population is not going to have as much chronic pain, as a rule, of course, there's exceptions, as opposed to the population of patients who feel pretty bad about themselves. And it's not too difficult for that to be revealed in an assessment, in a consultation with a patient, especially over the next 2 or 3 hours of consulting with them. And it's interesting that you even asked that question, because I ask the following. when you have a real crappy day, does your pain get worse? Now, 95% will say, oh, yeah, absolutely. If it's my back, my neck, my headaches. Now, not everybody. Not everybody. That doesn't mean we can't treat them. But most people have a very direct connection between the emotionality of the day, the stress levels of the day, and their pain. And that's being studied. That's nothing new. We really do understand the connection between the emotions and how we call that top down, from the brain down, how those emotions right. from the brain affect the different parts of the body, even your autoimmune system. You know, and people with autoimmune diseases, that's having no, that's no fun. That's chronic pain on a daily basis for some folks. And by definition, they'll automatically form depression and anxiety. And it's not difficult at all to see it, to measure it, you know, assess it and treat it. Most patients are very compliant. They really want to get well. And that's what we do.
You know, I've had the opportunity to talk to doctors who are pain management specialists. You know, that's what you're doing, really. But, you know, these are situations where they actually involve installing a pump in a patient's body to administer medication. Do you treat pain management the way you do it, primarily with medication, or is it a combination of that plus your psychoanalysis
As a dentist, I did. You know, I was on a pain team at the hospital and at the school, and then we prescribed medication. But these procedures that you just spoke about are pretty aggressive. They work terrific for some people, for some others, not so. And some interesting research showed that these aggressive procedures get about 50% relief in about 30 to 40% of the population. Now, that's not necessarily terrible, but, you know, one would think you're getting a much better success rate. However, right. when you combine the two procedures, when you combine that aggressive treatment, which is it's an excellent treatment, but when you combine it with the stuff that I do, with addressing the behavioral and the psychological, using psychotherapies, et cetera, you combine the two, the success rate goes up about 80%. So
yeah,
it's really
I can appreciate
a combination.
Yeah. But I gather most of what you do, you're really working on the mind and the brain first and foremost. Do you also administer a lot of medication? People walk out with, you know, prescriptions for pills as well?
Zero medication. This is
zero.
Done with. Yes. I mean, if I'm working with a physician, with an anesthesiologist boarded in pain, or a physiatrist, or even the general physician, and they want to prescribe medication, they might. but no, I don't. I don't prescribe anything. But we can even use.
I was just going to say that
we even teach patients how to breathe. Believe it or not, relaxed breathing, called mindfulness breathing, reduces pain while they're sitting. While they're sitting in the chair, their pain drops. And then they see they can actually control the pain. And that gives them a tremendous feeling. Yeah.
Doctor, you've given us a lot of very interesting information here. This is kind of fascinating. You know, we've almost run out of time. I told you at the beginning it was going to go fast. I want to take a moment and repeat the fact that we've been talking with Dr. Jay Goldman. He's headquartered in Palm Beach Gardens, Florida. And he has a fabulous website. You get it on right, that like I missed out in the beginning. It's www.jrgoldman.com. And that has the information on how to contact the doctor, where his office is, and the various kinds of things that he treats. So if you're interested in what you've heard, and there's a lot here, pain management, all of this kind of thing, contact Dr. Goldman. That's how you can reach him. Doctor, we've flown, the time has just flown by. I gather you love what you're doing now. You're so much more than just as you started out as a dentist, right?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It's very gratifying. Every day is rewarding.
Well, listen, thank you so much for being with us. We really appreciate it. And you will be back here with us on Close Up Talk Radio this time again next week. So those of you who are listening and want to hear more from Dr. Goldman, join us next week at this same time, okay? Doctor, it's gone by too fast. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you.
All righty. Good night, Dr. Goldman, and good night, everybody. Time's up. I'm Doug Llewellyn. See you next time. Bye for now.